This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you News of the World Night Special. Tonight, International, New American Propaganda of Action Electrifies Europe. Berlin, crisis, so what? Salt Lake City, Warren demands campaign temperance. Washington, science solves the riddle of the human brain. Those are the headlines. I'll be back in a moment with News of the World.
Fast relief from headache pain. That's what Alka-Seltzer offers you. So remember, when you have a headache or when some member of your family has one, depend on Alka-Seltzer for speedy relief from headache discomfort. Just drop one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets into a glass of water, watch it sparkle, listen to it fizz, then drink it. Do this and notice how quickly you begin to feel better. You'll agree there's nothing quite like Alka-Seltzer for fast relief from headache pain. And there's some good reasons why this is so. For one thing, Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved before you take it. And so its pain-relieving analgesic, sodium acetyl salicylate, is ready to go right to work. Also, because of its effervescent base. Yes, because of that fizz, Alka-Seltzer gets there fast, gives fast relief. Now, you'll never know just how good Alka-Seltzer can be until you try it. So do try it the next time a headache comes along and makes you feel irritable and upset. Always keep your home well supplied with Alka-Seltzer. Never be without it. And then remember, when a headache causes grief, misery can be brief. Take Alka-Seltzer for relief. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
Ever so often, the day's news develops in a way that brings out the halftones in the picture of current events. All is not hard black lines and sharp, clear white paper. All is not spectacular or sensational. Today, for example, Secretary of State George Marshall is quoted directly on the point. He refers to endless conference and seemingly endless dispute in the United Nations. He insists that conference and dispute could not be or should not be a cause for discouragement. Protracted negotiations, he said, may be desirable as a poultice to draw some of the fever out of the problem. Across the Atlantic, even though blood has been spilt in Berlin, and spilt often, the people there have accommodated themselves to the wear and tear of conflict, a conflict that is still short of war. Testimony in point also comes tonight from Dr. Carl J. Frederick of Harvard University. He's a special advisor to General Lucius Clay, our commander in Berlin. Dr. Frederick has just returned from the former German capital. He says the Russian blockade may be a blessing in disguise, from our point of view, now that we've established the airlift. I personally, he adds, would leave it up to the Soviet Union to maintain the blockade as long as they wish. We, in turn, are making out of it a propaganda of action. We have thus convinced a lot of doubting Dutchmen and Swedes and others, in addition to the Germans. Moreover, the effect of the blockade is telling on Soviet soldiers. Desertions from the Soviet army are increasing. These soldiers look up to the sky and see American planes coming into Berlin every 2 or 3 minutes. And there's more fresh testimony in point from the Democratic vice presidential candidate, Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky. The senator arrived today at National Airport from Europe. He gave us his view by recorder, like this. Senator Barkley.
We went up into Germany and had a long conference with General Clay and Ambassador Murphy. And I'm glad to say that the situation there seems to me to be improving. While it may be a long and tough tussle with the Soviet in regard to the particular situation in Berlin and the larger situation as to all Germany, the economic condition of the German people is improving. And they seem more determined to establish a government in the western part of Germany, regardless of what happens in the eastern part, as soon as possible. And the chances seem bright that by January they will have a provisional government, which will take over a large part of the administration of the local affairs of the German people. General Clay and Ambassador Murphy are optimistic about the final outcome of the situation, though, of course, there may be embarrassing and annoying episodes and difficulties on the way.
None of this testimony, of course, and we hasten to underscore this point, none of this testimony is intended to clear our minds of concern. The international tension of 1948 is here to stay for as long as any of us can see ahead, and it could produce a flaming war, but it has not produced war, and the Western powers are intent on patient negotiation, either directly or through the United Nations, as we reported last night. The one point we cannot yield, however, is the point of firmness. Once that hard surface of opposition should disappear, with it, as Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin of Britain says, with it will go any hope of peace at all, because the Russian leaders are only too eager to rush in where it's also safe for angels' treads. And the communists are just as intent as ever on creating all the situations of ill will that are possible. Their Romanian puppets today demanded that the United States recall 4 employees of our legation in that Balkan country because, they said, these employees played the spy. They took pictures in a forbidden zone of the port city of Giurgiu near Bucharest. Our government did recall the employees, but in their place we left a stinging note of denial that the employees took pictures in Giurgiu. These incidents we can expect on both sides endlessly, as we have indicated before. We might as well settle down, get used to them, the same way the people of Berlin are settling down. Here's a recorded report on that score from John McVane in Berlin.
Outside Berlin, you get the impression this is a tense and harried place, where armed guards glare at one another across barriers that block passage between the east and west sectors of the city. That's not true. There are no barriers to prevent anyone from walking or driving in and out of the Soviet sector of Berlin as he wishes. You would have to keep a map of Berlin in your head to know where the boundary lines are. There are no guards stationed there. Millions of Berliners pass back and forth as I have done every day. The only difference is you don't see many of our soldiers in the Russian sector or many Russians in our sector. There are slight changes in the uniforms of the East and West police forces, and that's all. American women and children here are leading quiet, normal lives. There's no particular worry about the Russians resorting to any armed action. Along the Kurfürstendamm, the main shopping street, people are eating and drinking in the outdoor cafes, although there's a nip of fall in the air. One American woman who'd been here for a couple of years said to me, "Where is all this excitement in Berlin that people at home write me about?" She was exaggerating a little, but ordinarily most people here don't notice the little incidents you read or hear about. For instance, today, 2 or 3 Russian patrols crossed the invisible line into the American sector. Nothing happened, but as one American soldier said, "This Russian stuck his Tommy gun into my chest. I figured I was bigger than him, so I stuck mine in his, and they all went away." This is John McVane in Berlin.
In American politics today, the temperance of Senator Barkley is followed by temperance from Governor Warren tonight. Here's Charles Barrington, station KDYL, Salt Lake City.
Governor Earl Warren of California, the Republican vice presidential candidate, opened the Republican national campaign in Salt Lake City tonight. Next Tuesday, President Harry S. Truman comes to Salt Lake for a major address, and Governor Thomas E. Dewey comes in for an address September 30th. The big white-haired California governor didn't unwrap a slam-bang issue in his talk tonight. He said he had selected tonight to open the Republican campaign because this is the eve of Constitution Day, and he thought it appropriate to initiate the national campaign on the eve of the 161st anniversary of the signing of the Constitution. The governor urged his audience to approach today's problems as Americans, not as political partisans. Unite the country, don't divide it, was his theme. Warren said he wouldn't even criticize the national administration for failure to provide specific remedies for some problems, because some of the problems defy immediate cure. He said the campaign issue was whether the present administration is displaying unity or whether it's time for a house cleaning. He took the latter view. Earlier at a press conference, the only questions reporters asked were about reclamation and western water right problems. The reporters and the governor himself showed almost as much interest in a girl whose hat was equipped with light bulbs which flashed on and off. She represented Miss Utah Industry, and the governor wanted his picture taken with her with all the light bulbs turned on. This is Charles Barrington in Salt Lake City.
Tonight's science adds a touch of harmony to the scene with a sensational, excuse it, revolutionary discovery concerning the human brain. Here is science editor David Dietz.
A new theory of mathematics that does for the human brain what Einstein's theory of relativity did for the universe was described in Washington today at the centennial meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Its inventor is Dr. Norbert Wiener of Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Dr. Wiener hides behind a bushy iron-gray beard, horn-rimmed spectacles, and a big black cigar. But the world of science has long known Dr. Wiener as a mathematical genius. During World War II, he designed a gun pointer for Uncle Sam that would guess what an airplane pilot was going to do next and put a shell there when the plane arrived. In 1940, he built an electronic calculating machine that would solve in seconds problems that would otherwise take months. And now, he has shown that the human brain behaves like such a calculating machine. He calls his new kind of mathematics cybernetics. It reduces the operation of the human brain to a series of mathematical equations and explains mathematically such normal functions of the brain as memory and such abnormal occurrences as neurotic impulses and repressions. According to Dr. Wiener, the 10 billion nerve cells of the human brain are like 10 billion telephone stations connected by a complex system of electric circuits and radio waves. The waves are brain waves, and the mathematical laws obeyed by these waves and the other electrical connections in the brain are the explanations of how the brain functions. This is David Dietz in Washington.
Now, around the world in a minute and a half by Datelines, Washington. President Truman took out 5 minutes from campaign planning tonight to tell members of the Electrical Cooperative Association that he's been for rural electrification for 13 years. The president said he'd like to go back to the farm himself and enjoy the new gadgets and machinery provided by electricity. But he added he has every reason to believe his term in the White House will extend beyond January the 20th. The chief executive leaves tomorrow for a western swing beginning at Dexter, Iowa on Saturday. Albany, New York. Governor Dewey wound up a series of farm conferences today and tackled last-minute preparations for his western tour with a determination that could spell trouble for the president's White House tenancy. He speaks in Des Moines, does Governor Dewey, on Monday. San Francisco, a Seattle company, one that has made its peace with the CIO Longshoremen's Union, has been offered the Army's contracts to move cargo on the Pacific Coast. The company, Griffiths and Sprague, has not decided whether to accept. Meanwhile, the Army is loading its own cargo with civil service employees. New York, the Westinghouse Electric Company signed up today with the CIO American Communication Equipment Workers and thereby averted a walkout of 25,000 men, the men who make telephone equipment. There's a variable pay rise of from 8 to 15 cents an hour, and that's what happened around the world today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Does an upsetting day sometimes make you feel miserable with acid indigestion? Well, if so, remember this. For acid indigestion, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. Yes, drink a glass of sparkling, refreshing Alka-Seltzer. Let it help you feel better in a hurry. See how quickly Alka-Seltzer helps relieve the upset, jittery feeling in the stomach. How it acts to reduce excess gastric acidity. Get Alka-Seltzer from your druggist, and then remember, for acid indigestion, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer.
Don't take chances. Are you sure you're getting all the essential vitamins you need from the food you eat? Remember this. Government surveys show that the meals of 3 out of 4 persons are short on vitamins. Don't take chances. Instead, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Lack of vitamins in your food can cause you to feel under par and run down. So take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. 60 capsules, 2 months supply, only $2 at any drugstore. Potency guaranteed by Miles Laboratories. Lack of vitamins in your food can keep you from feeling your best and looking your best. You can't afford to take chances. Take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules.
Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here's a sign of our times. Washington, a former official of the Communist Party, today answered questions, all but one, before a House Labor Subcommittee. He admitted he was a communist of long standing, and his testimony may be the new Communist Party line. Here's a sample of the questions and answers. Questions by Senator Scott Lucas of Illinois. Answers by witness Ben Gold, an official of the Fur Workers Union. Lucas, would you support the United States in a war against Russia? Gold, we don't want war with anybody. I stand for every effort to get peace with every nation. Lucas, you would not fight against Russia? Gold, I'll bear no arms against any nation that the war makers want us to attack. But if we are invaded, I'll give my life. Lucas, what if Russia invaded our country? Gold, impossible. Why should you ask such a question? I answered your general question. Lucas, all right, that included Russia. But unanswered still is the question. Would an American communist choose Soviet Russia or his own America in case of trouble between the two nations? And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow at this same time, this is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Jerusalem, Bernadotte, a martyr in the name of the United Nations. International, the UN calls emergency session. London, war's over in India. Aboard the Limited, a new day in railroad luxury. Chicago, a new slant on everyday living. That brief message from Tom Moore.
A slant on how to go to the movies, Morgan, even with a headache. Could this be the case in your home, folks? Tonight would be a swell night to go to see a movie, and the whole family's in favor of it except you. Now, you don't want to go because you have a headache. Yes, you've had a busy day, and all the thanks you get for it's a nagging headache. Well, why don't you try this? Drink a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer for relief. Yes, that's the ticket, Alka-Seltzer. Dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water, then drink the bubbling, pleasant-tasting solution this makes. Since Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved, before you drink it, the pain-relieving agent, sodium acetyl salicylate, is ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, yes, because of that fizz, mind you, Alka-Seltzer gets there fast, gives fast relief. Yes, take that Alka-Seltzer, and the chances are you'll say pretty soon, okay, what movie do you have in mind? Worth trying, don't you think? Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
A peacemaker became a martyr today in the name of the United Nations. It's another of the tragic events that dogged the footsteps of our generation. We refer, of course, to the assassination of Count Volker Bernadotte, the United Nations mediator in the Palestine War. The story does not begin with the bullets that ended the life of the Swedish arbiter. He had warnings. His mind was filled with forebodings as he shuttled back and forth by airplane between Arab lands and Jerusalem. He had been the author of two periods of truce between these stubborn armed camps. One truce that failed, another that was about to fail. Yes, about to fail, even though the authority of the United Nations was behind it. The story begins, therefore, with a train of events dating back nearly a week ago, when the Count prepared his latest pessimistic accounting to the United Nations. We report the story from the beginning. On Monday night of this week, Count Bernadotte dined with his staff in a restaurant in the Arab city of Amman, Transjordan. Said Count Bernadotte, "Let us dine well. With our food, we shall have a little wine, white wine, then red and champagne. This is our chance to enjoy ourselves, for soon we go back to Jerusalem. There is nothing but trouble and sorrow there." On Thursday, yesterday, the United Nations party arrived in Damascus, the capital of Syria, for more peace talks. In Damascus, the Count said, "I shall return to Jerusalem tomorrow to try to arrange for a demilitarized area. Arab and Jewish forces must be separated. The soldiers of both sides are trigger-happy. Frequently, shootings break out without either side knowing what the shooting is all about or what they're shooting at. They shoot into the dark at night. They snipe by daylight. Excuse me, but it is most idiotic." An hour later, an outlaw radio station in Jewish territory broadcast a fake report that one of the Count's staff had been killed. The voice said, "If the United Nations plane attempts to land near Jerusalem, it will be fired on." The Count ignored the warning. On Friday morning, this morning, he left Damascus early with his party. No sooner was the Bernadotte plane airborne than the radio operator copied another warning message. Count Bernadotte read it and handed it over to a companion. It said, "Urgent, inform all aircraft against landing Colandia Airport, Jerusalem. They will be fired upon." "I will not be frightened," said the Count. So the plane landed in Jerusalem on schedule at 11 a.m. The Bernadotte party clambered into motor cars. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a rifle cracked. A tire on the official car exploded. Count Bernadotte climbed out, calmly inspected the tire, waited for repairs. "I don't mind being shot at by regulars," he said, "but not by irregulars." At 1 p.m. Washington time today, the State Department radio crackled out the tragic news of assassination. A message from John J. McDonald, American consul in Jerusalem. It said, "Regret to report, Count Bernadotte and Colonel André Serrault, French officer and senior United Nations observer in Jerusalem, killed this afternoon about 1700 hours. That's 5 p.m. Jerusalem time. Presumably shot by Stern Gang. They are Jewish underground terrorists. Convoy in which Count riding was returning from Government House. As they passed through a Jewish-held area, jeep suddenly appeared, blocking route. Jeep contained four men, two of whom proceeded to Count's car. Colonel Frank Begley, UN security officer, grappled with one, was slightly wounded in face. Second man reached Count's car and assassinated the two men at point-blank range with Sten guns. Jeep succeeded in escaping." That message shocked the Western world. For the story of reaction to the Count's martyrdom, here is John Donovan in New York.
A stunned United Nations Security Council has called a special session to discuss the murders of Count Volk Bernadotte and French Army Colonel Serrault. Till now, there have been no official statements from the Israeli government in Tel Aviv or the Stern Group headquarters in Jerusalem. Reports from the Middle East attribute the assassinations to a Jewish extremist group, the Stern Gang. If, as reported, the Stern Gang did commit this crime, then they will probably issue a statement citing their reasons for killing Count Bernadotte. For many months now, Jewish extremists have accused Count Bernadotte and United Nations observers as having been pro-Arab. As United Nations mediator, Count Bernadotte worked hard to bring some sort of practical peace to Palestine. Jewish extremists, and indeed many other Jews, have felt that since the Arabs were contesting the United Nations decision to partition Palestine, that the Jews should drive the Arabs back on every front. Further, Jewish extremists regard Jerusalem as theirs and not as an international city under the United Nations. The Israeli government will undoubtedly try to bring to justice the political fanatics who committed this crime. But it is only natural that the United Nations will be increasingly severe with the new Jewish state. The murder of Count Bernadotte may touch off new internal warfare between the Israeli government and Jewish extremists. This is John Donovan in New York.
Another strange event, to us strange anyway, was the sudden capitulation today of Hyderabad to the newly formed state of India. For that story recorded, we crossed the Atlantic to Merrill Muller in London.
The second outbreak of civil war in the subcontinent of India ended just a few hours ago tonight when the Nizam of Hyderabad ordered his troops to cease fire and Dominion of India forces occupied the garrison city of Secunderabad, a few miles from the Nizam's capital. Fortunately, this contest of Muslim Indian against Hindu Indian, and even brother against brother, lasted only 5 days, with preliminary reports indicating a minimum of bloodshed, as compared with the longer and more gruesome border clashes in northwestern India last year. Expressing regrets in a broadcast for assuming full powers at such a late date, the Nizam of Hyderabad, one of the wealthiest of India's princely potentates, and a Muslim ruler of what is really a Hindu state, dismissed his cabinet tonight, installed his son as chairman of a ruling committee, and ordered a ceasefire. He then advised the new Governor General of India that Indian Army forces could march straight to their objective, Secunderabad, without opposition. Those forces promptly started to occupy the city, calling on all the Nizam's troops to lay down their arms. Prime Minister Nehru of India will now broadcast a resume of these events to the world tomorrow night. But what the world is anxiously waiting to know is whether the new Dominion of India will prove worthy of her forced annexation of Hyderabad with just and peaceful political solutions. Undoubtedly, the Nizam will have to formally abdicate, in the opinion of British Indian experts. The state will probably be given a Hindu administration as part of the new Dominion of India. The Nizam played considerable politics in trying to hold his huge private state, and only the refusal of other powers to intervene prevented a greater conflict. This is Merrill Muller in London.
Here in America today, there's a high-speed marker in railway history thundering westward. Transcribed, here's W.W. Chaplin aboard the 20th Century Limited.
I'm speaking from the radio telephone booth on the brand-new 20th Century Limited, probably the most luxurious train ever built. We're westbound out of New York on the first passenger run of this flight of the New York Central. In a few minutes, the $2 million twin of this train will leave Chicago on its first run. We'll pass like trains in the night. This new century, latest of a 46-year succession of centuries, has a diesel engine so long, it's got a good start to Chicago before it ever leaves New York. The train is full of wonder, car doors that open at a touch, telephone service to all the world, original oil paintings in lounge and observation cars, one car completely devoted to kitchens and quarters for the crew, and right in the next compartment to this club car telephone booth is a complete barbershop. A shave and a haircut at 85 miles an hour may sound a little risky, but the barber, Frank Hill First, tells me he's been using clippers and razor on the old century for 28 years, and he's never lost a customer or even nicked one. There was a big ceremony when we left New York with the famous red carpet, the biggest carpet in the world, run all down the platform. And then the new century, a dreamliner indeed, moved smooth and swift along the Hudson to open a new era of elegance in railroad transportation. This is W.W. Chaplin on the new century.
Now, around the political world by datelines in a minute and a half. Washington, President Truman left Washington today on his marathon campaign trip. Ahead of him are more than 100 speeches, 10,000 political miles, and 19 states. He promised Senator Alvin Barkley, his running mate, to fight hard and give him hell. Before the president departed, he wrote a letter to a group of distinguished scientists who had protested against what they called the smearing methods of the House Un-American Activities Committee, said the president, "The nation must protect itself against espionage and untrustworthy personnel in atomic energy plants. I am equally determined," he added, "that we shall maintain our safeguards within the framework of our democratic principles." But he said he was being opposed by highly placed persons who understand neither the significance of atomic energy nor the meaning of genuine national security in a democratic nation. The presidential letter trailed by a few hours the House committee's answer to attacks by scientists, said Chairman J. Parnell Thomas and his colleagues in a formal accounting. There is an FBI report on Dr. Edward U. Condon, the head of the National Bureau of Standards. The president has the report. It covers the details of the association of Dr. Condon with alleged espionage agents, including Nathan Gregory Silvermaster. Mr. Silvermaster has been described as the head of an espionage ring of governmental employees in the war period. It is, therefore, in the committee's view, obligatory on the president to release the Condon report. Incidentally, Dr. Condon has indicated he'd like to have all the facts published. Meanwhile, Senator Homer Ferguson of Michigan wrote a letter to Attorney General Tom Clark suggesting that the Attorney General prosecute known communists both in and out of the government in half a dozen big cities. And that's what happened around the political world today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Well, now the weekend's at hand. Maybe you have some plans, particularly if the weather turns out to be warm and pleasant. Well, now you don't want those plans interfered with because of a headache or acid indigestion, do you? So right now, before the weekend even starts, check up on your supply of Alka-Seltzer. Yes, you may want that Alka-Seltzer for relief of these ailments. So make sure of that supply, for the Alka-Seltzer you don't have can't possibly do you any good. If you see the bottle's almost empty, go to your druggist and get another package of Alka-Seltzer. And say, buy an extra package, too. That's the wisest thing to do. That's an extra package of Alka-Seltzer.
Remember this, don't take chances. If you're not sure you're getting all the essential vitamins you need from the food you eat, supplement your meals with one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Lack of vitamins can cause you to feel under par, run down, keep you from feeling your best, and so looking your best. Don't take chances. Take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Yes, for a basic daily vitamin supply, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. You can't afford to take chances. Only $2 for 60 capsules, a two-month supply. Potency is guaranteed by Miles Laboratories. Ask your druggist for one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules.
Now here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Eglin Field, Florida. The Army reports that high-flying B-29 planes practicing war dropped live bombs on troops by mistake. 5 soldiers were killed, 29 injured yesterday. The Air Force is investigating. Albany. Governor Dewey accused the Truman administration tonight of an intentional fabrication designed to deceive the producers of food in our country. He referred, of course, to charges that the Republicans are trying to wreck the government program of farm price supports. Said Governor Dewey, a firm program of price supports at reasonable levels will benefit both producers and consumers. Governor Dewey said he's for the principle of the price supports voted by the Republican Congress in July. Baseball. National League gets 5.5 games ahead for the Braves. Boston 6, Pirates 2. Workhorse Johnny Sain pitched victory number 21. Cardinals in third place now. They beat the Dodgers 4-2. Phillies 6, Cubs 3. Reds 5, Giants 3. Americans, more status quo. The Big 3 all won. Boston over St. Louis 9-3. One game ahead. Yankees over Detroit 13-5. Cleveland over Washington 4-1. And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow at this same time, this is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.